So with my introductory lecture, I was already preparing for the fact that we will start this course with the so-called game theory. And that's why my first chapter and my first section is game theory. And maybe it's most helpful if I just start with an example. And the very famous example is the so-called prisoner's dilemma. And maybe I first start the dilemma and then I bring numbers on the blackboard. So the idea about the prisoner's dilemma is that two persons are caught in the act of coming out of a house which is not their house. So in a way, they are really ready for being sentenced for entering a house which they shouldn't do, which will give them some time in prison anyway. But of course, the police thinks that they did also things in the house, for example, like stealing or maybe even murdering someone, but they can't prove it. So the police really would have to rest on at least one of the two confessing to a crime, which is more than just entering a house. And so there are, of course, ways to persuade persons to confess. For example, that the person who is confessing is just treated specially, so getting less time in prison. For the other person, who is then kind of the really bad person, getting a long term in prison. But this is destroyed if both persons confess, yeah, because then this extra bonus is kind of destroyed if both persons confess. So the situation for the persons which are caught is kind of a simple one, because they just have to decide if they confess or don't confess. And maybe it's easier to see it with some numbers on the blackboard. So we have two persons, which I call A and B. So if, for example, A confesses, then this would mean that A will have 1 year in prison. Try to make this as short as possible in the notation. And the other person, which doesn't confess, gets 9 years. Maybe I put this here. A confesses, B does not confess. This is one situation. If nobody confesses, then both will get 3 years. And if both confess, they get 7 years. This is just, you know, to have an example where we can really calculate. But this is kind of the right range of ordering the punishment for behaving bad and behaving with the police. And of course, this is symmetric, so if B confesses and A does not confess, the situation is just the same, just application to A and B is interchanged. So, and you see that it's not really an easy decision. It could be an easy decision if you really trust the other person, because then it's always the best not to confess for both. So, because then both just get 3 years. And whenever you confess, it just depends on what the other person is doing, what is the outcome for yourself. So you are not really very much in control what's happening after that. But on the other hand, if you don't confess and the other person is confessing, you also lose the control about what's happening in your life. So maybe a good life advice with this prisoner's dilemma is to be very short about these things before you enter a house, just to be sure what's happening later on. But of course, this is kind of... it's a nice case to tell, because it catches people's imagination, But of course, you can also apply it to a lot of other different situations where kind of if you can't really negotiate a decision, you have to just make the decision without asking another person, then the outcome can be as the outcome here, just with different numbers. But it's the same situation on a mathematical modeling level. Of course, you know, I was already trying to tell you that this is a difficult situation, but the situation becomes even more difficult if you don't really have numbers for the outcome. So if you would like to model a situation like that, but with just kind of a gut feeling of the outcome, and this is the second example in the script and also the second example which I want to put on the blackboard, and I called it Sunday leisure or Saturday leisure in order to capture people's imagination. Very often it's called Battle of the Sexes, because it's understood that men and women have kind of different interests, and as a couple you have to kind of live with that happily, hopefully. And the problem with the Saturday leisure is that a couple has two choices. And the appointment for these choices is not clear. So there is kind of a vague idea in mind, and they both are not really sure what was the appointment precisely. This is not clear already. So two choices of places with activity. And in order to make this interesting, of course, is one person would favor one activity and the other person would favor the other activity. And so you have kind of two things in your life. So for example, being at the same place with your partner is considered as a bonus here, because they are a couple, they should enjoy the company of each other. But this has to be compared if you are at the place where you like what's happening. So for example, if the male partner is very much into soccer, this could be that you have to accompany him to a soccer game. So the advantage is that you are with your partner, but it could be a disadvantage that you have to endure a soccer game, which you don't like, if you don't like it. But, you know, you are already trained enough that you can kind of abstract from that, that this is really kind of a decision which we have to do almost each day, or at least weekly sometimes. And so, in a way, by choosing the place you are going to, you have kind of a probability that your partner is choosing the same place. And nevertheless, you would like to choose between places, so you are more attracted to the place where the things is happening which you personally would like to happen. And you should kind of, for having a real model where you can calculate something, you must put this with numbers. So if you would be at your favorable activity with your partner by chance, this would be the perfect outcome for you. Might not be the perfect outcome for your partner in our model, because for your partner, the perfect outcome would be that you are with him at his favorable place. So I will just put here 100% happiness, which is not really a number, but this is, as I was telling in my introductory lecture, this is kind of a meta level where you try to put something in words which in the end should become a model. Then, of course, you could be at your hated, just making this very poignant, activity or less favored activity with your partner. And then, of course, it doesn't really, it's not really clear what is more important to do. But of course, we could say this is like a 50% happiness. It depends how much you hate the activity. But of course, I would kind of think if you are an adult person, you would agree to share activities which you can just, you know, if you really hate them very much, you would never make an appointment for that. So it should be something which is okay, at least. So 50% could be okay. But what is, of course, really, really bad, if you are at your hated activity and your partner, probably in order to please you or because he had something different in mind, is at the place which you would like to be, so you are without your partner. So this is for sure 0% happiness. And it's easier to write if I raise the blackboard a little bit. And of course, you could also have like a similar situation with this half happiness if you are at your favorite activity. So because it's an activity you like, but your partner doesn't show up. So he's at the other place. And also here, I would say this is like 50%. And this is not like, you know, a law measuring it that way, but at least it's not completely unreasonable. So with these two kind of introductory problems, which are, you know, kind of everyday problems, of course, we have several questions. And these are questions which I would like to answer with the help of game theory. So, and the questions, firstly, are kind of just formulated as you would formulate them in everyday life. What is a good strategy? Whatever that means. Because in order to really calculate something, you have to be much more precise than just putting this question. And this is already kind of, after you live like more than 20 years, you know that asking for the best strategy could just be a little bit too much. So you are just happy not ending up with a strategy which is really stupid. So something which is good would already help a lot. Nevertheless, what is the best strategy? You know, you can always try to have the best. Why not? And we should start about thinking about that with the question if it is even possible to find either a best or a good strategy. So a question could also be, is there a good or even a best strategy? And of course, in making this more precise, there are a lot of different possibilities to first formulate the model and then to work with the data in the model. And this is not just, you know, I like to start this lecture about modeling with that because I think to formulate the problems is really kind of a convincing thing. So you immediately see that this is something which is related to everyday decisions. And it's also, I know, that at the KIT, there is a department which solves a lot of kind of decisions to buy a lot of shares or to kind of negotiate contracts between big companies with the help of the same strategies which I will introduce just on the easiest level. Yeah, but this is not just playing. This is really something which is applied to negotiate and to see why people behave in a certain way and to react on expected behavior and things like that. So you have kind of an everyday entrance to the thing, but nevertheless, after three or four steps, you see two things. Firstly, it's not that easy. And secondly, it really has an impact on life in the end, if you understand that. Okay, so of course, in order to answer these questions, we need a mathematical description or a more precise description, and I will just call this mathematical. So we need a mathematical description. And there is also one problem which is a serious problem and which we can't really solve with the help of the tools which we will discuss in this lecture. This is that it's often really difficult to find the corresponding data. Yeah. So, for example, for the prisoner's dilemma, at least it looks like we know what is to be expected, because you know you have a certain laws which apply. But even there, it's not really very precise. It's just, you know, like approximately. But for finding a right model for this Saturday leisure activities, you really have to be very sure about your own wishes and who is really. So just to put there like a percentage of happiness, it's not so easy. And it really might differ from person to person, and it probably differs even for the same persons on different days. Yeah. What's more important for me? It's more important to be with the partner, or it's more important that I have a little bit of fun and just, you know, forgetting about everyday life or whatever. So to find the data, I can't really give very good advice, only that I would like you to remember that finding data very often is really the hardest part of the model. So, as you have already seen in very many circumstances, what we start with is something which we call normal form, so which we consider to be normal. On German, normal form. This is in order to reduce problems which on the surface look a bit different to something which is kind of the core experience, which is distilled into this normal form. And the normal form has two players. So our two persons, A and B, in the prisoner's dilemma are called players. No matter if, for example, they are bosses of big companies, nevertheless, in the context of our game theory, we call them players. And I will stick to A and B. And this is also kind of a standard thing in the game theory to call them A and B. Both players have possibilities to play. And these possibilities are called strategies. So the important word here, so maybe I use colors because I have a lot of colors here. It's really nice. So the normal form needs players. Players have the name A and B. And both players can apply so-called strategies. And in mathematical terms, so maybe first the names and then the mathematical. So the player A has strategies SA. So this S comes from strategy. And the player B has SB. And these are both sets. So you have a set of decisions which you can take. Yeah. And applying this to our examples, you immediately see that the set in the prisoner's dilemma is to confess or not to confess. And the set of decisions for the Saturday leisure problem is to either go to the one place or to the other. So the set is just a two-element set in both examples. And of course, you could imagine that in an everyday setting, there would be probably a lot more possible decisions. But to understand things with just two might be more easy and nevertheless gives you a general understanding how to proceed. Okay, if we have this like that, for the normal form, we assume that these possibilities are connected in the way that if we, yeah, not we assume, we write. If we want to speak about this set of decisions which player B has, as referring to my first player, player A, I can also write this as being the set of decisions minus A. So this is just in order to have the possibility to write everything for one player using one letter. So this is something like the opposite strategy or something like that. This is just because the meaning of this minus could be defended like that. So now I will take that down in order to write on the right-hand side of that. And you will see this later on if you couldn't copy it now. No, it's this one. So I think, so from the mathematical point of view, I was referring to the strategies as being sets with two elements. Of course, you could also consider sets which have infinitely many elements. And, you know, you can kind of consider whatever you like. But in order to really do game theory, we like to consider so-called finite games, which means that the set has just a finite number of elements. So a game is called finite and ever. So these two bars on both sides of the set mean that we count the number of elements and we come up with a natural number. And this natural number should really be a finite number. And of course, this should be true for both sets of the possible decisions. So our strategies are numbered. And very often, if we really want to refer to different strategies, we will use the small letter A for the strategies of the player capital A and the small letter B to the strategies of the player capital B. So we have a set which goes from strategy 1, A1, A2, and so on. And to something which is the number of strategies which the player A has. And in order to have the possibility to have different numbers for both players, this number is N capital A. This looks a bit more complicated than you do it in the end, but the general frame needs that. And do the same for the second player, SB. You have strategy B1, B2, and the last strategy is one which is a number which belongs to the player capital B and is called NB. And of course, with in reference to what I did here, this NA is precisely the size of the decision set of capital A player, and NB is the size of the set of decisions of SB. And if we want to prescribe or define a game or speak about a game in mathematical terms, what we have to say is, of course, what strategies are chosen by both players. So a game is just a selection of both decision sets. So this cross refers to making pairs of decisions, yes? First, there is a decision of player A and the corresponding decision of player B, and this together is one step in the game. And depending on what kind of games you allow for, so sometimes the easiest games, of course, just have one choice. So for the prisoner's dilemma, for example, you just make one decision and then the game is over. And also for the Saturday leisure, for one Saturday, it's just one decision and the game is over. So you have just one pair of decisions, which makes the game. And of course, you could also consider having several steps in the game. Then you would have a first pair and then a second pair and maybe a third pair of decisions making up the game. And in order to leave that open, I'm just speaking about a selection of pairs. And the selection could be just one. Okay. So now what we have is we have a scientific name for the people in the game, which are called players. We have a name for their possible decisions, which we call strategies. And we know what we are meaning if we say game in mathematical terms of the game theory. But of course, in order to make decisions, we should also have numbers attached to the decisions we are making. And these numbers in game theory are called a payoff. So we need a so-called payoff function. And of course, it's clear what this payoff function should do whenever we have a pair of decisions, so from this SA cross SB, there should be a number attached as a payoff or two numbers, because there might be a different payoff for player one and player two. So, and the payoff function very often is called U. And we have a payoff function for player A and a payoff function for player B. And I don't want to double writing down everything. So I will write player X. And X stands here for either A or B. And this payoff function takes the selection and attaches a real number. So in a finite game, this is a matrix. So you could say this can be written in a table, and mathematically speaking, you can write down that as a matrix. And then it's, of course, easy to also calculate that on the computer. So maybe I need a rule of which of the blackboard reacts to which of the switches. I will learn that. What is generally used here, since we are just reducing everything to two players, it's easy to have one matrix with pairs of numbers. So we have one matrix for player A and one matrix for player B, and we combine that to one matrix of pairs. So, and I will just put this here, even if this is kind of already the second step. Yeah. So finite game, if we have a finite game, this is a matrix for each player. Maybe I just stick with this X here. So you have to read this. This is a matrix for player A, and this is a matrix for player B. And we combine that to a matrix of pairs. And later on, of course, we will try to even get rid of the pairs by using special situations to make it a bit easier and easier to understand. Maybe to be just very clear here, of course, it's a matrix of pairs of numbers. So maybe I use the space below that announcement. So this matrix for the prisoner's dilemma would look like -7, -7. So this minus in front means that, of course, years in jail are not really nice. So you would like to have less years in jail, and you could find a different model for that. So then we have the possibility that someone is confessing and the other one not. And we have both combinations. So here it turns out differently for A and B. And then we have the situation where no one confesses. And then the situation looks like that. So that's what I was talking about there in general for our first example. This was, I was saying here that you should be really careful with what I'm writing on the blackboard. Because up to here, it's a matrix for the player A, and then that's really one number. And then we have a matrix for player B, which is also one number, and we like to compare them both in one matrix. And then you have two numbers, which is a pair of numbers. So I was making a second step very soon after the first step. Yeah. But it's better to ask, always. Because very often it's just small things which kind of get lost by writing and in the moment not listening or I'm not really very clear. This happens very often because I have a picture in mind which might be not your picture. Yeah. There is a one important special case. Maybe I put this here as important special case with two players or even with more than two players. But with two players, it's even more useful. This is if the payoff is always such that what one person is getting, the other person is losing. And this is called a zero-sum game. So very often, if you have to distribute certain goods, it's really also in everyday life a zero-sum game. So it makes sense to have special attention to this special case, even if it's really a special case only. And sometimes, putting numbers to everything and kind of negotiating things always in the back of your mind, you're having the idea that the number of goods is finite, so you are dealing with a zero-sum game. You are forgetting that not everything in life is a zero-sum game. So sharing love and sharing pain is not a zero-sum game. And so very often also other things are not that zero-sum games as you sometimes, by being very well trained to always consider this everything as a zero-sum game. But, by doing rational decisions about such facts, this is kind of a very important special case. So, and then, of course, if you have a zero-sum game for all strategies, I call them small s, even if I didn't really introduce that notation here, but it's kind of referring to the kind of notation which I already used for the capital A and the small a's, referring to each other, and the capital B and the small b's. So all the strategies are now small s in the set of all strategies, which is capital S. So for all strategies which exist, and this is kind of the set of all strategies either for A and B, you have that the payoff for one player is just the lose of the other player. So now I will... So I hope you are able to read that. Of course, in a way, the formula is one thing, but to know what the formula expressing is much more important. So if you add UA and UB, you always get zero. And that's what's written there in a more complicated way. Okay, so now we have kind of everything that we know what we can talk about. And of course, in a way, we will try to stick with zero-sum games first, because then kind of the information on one player always has information of the other player, because together the payoff is always zero. It makes it a bit easier. But I would like to start with kind of some general things. So our general assumption whenever we do game theory is that we have complete information. So, or perfect information. We have perfect information. And this refers to the payoff function. Put this in brackets, so relating to the payoff function. And I will just write payoff, staying kind of in between being mathematically precise, where it's really the payoff function, and understanding what we are doing, where we just need the information that it's the payoff. And of course, this is just a wishful thinking. We never have perfect information. But at least we could try to imagine that our information is enough information to make better decisions than without them. So since we always have an interaction between two players, and we already saw this in the first example, the payoff of one of the future prisoners is always connected to what the other person is doing. So choosing your own strategy tries to have in mind the other person. What would you expect the other person to do? And finding good strategies always kind of tries to look at different cases. And so I will present some cases just now. And I will call them first, second, and third scenario. So the first scenario, and even if this is kind of an algorithmic way to treat that, of course, in your everyday decision, you will have to choose first which kind of scenario is the one which you consider most probable to be appropriate. So this is already a modeling decision. And then you can follow the algorithm for the scenario which is appropriate. So the first scenario is B chooses a strategy without thinking about the other player. And I'm just, you could also interchange the names, of course, because this is a symmetric situation. So B chooses without thinking about A. I don't know what type you are, but I would never be able to do that. So I would always kind of try to guess what's inside the head of the other person, but you know, people are different, and it might be better to do it just like that. So you just make a choice just based on what's for you, and you just think of whatever the other person is doing, your choice should work for you. Then we could have an additional information to this scenario, which really changes kind of the behavior. If the person A knows that. Which is, you know, need not be true. It depends on how well they know each other and what are kind of the standard procedure in the profession. And they might not have met at all and have to make decisions which relate to both of their future life. But this could be kind of the standard thing that in a certain circumstance, you always make decisions just based on what will be the outcome, no matter what the other person is doing. And since this is the standard thing, of course, the other person is also knowing that you behave like that. Then it doesn't really, it's not really necessary to have the full matrix of payoff functions in our system, because it's only important to follow the game knowing the things which the player A can do. So only the payoff function UA is relevant. So this matrix of payoff functions very often are collected in a capital U. So we have a matrix, which is the matrix UA for player A, and the matrix UB, which is for player B. And if we have the pairs, then we would combine them to be U, A cross B, for example, or just writing U. And this is all just notation. But if you read in the script and also read in the book on which the script is based, you will find this in this notation, and maybe it's good to just have it once on the blackboard with giving some words what this means, even if I'm not heavily using it, because I think short notation is always helpful for calculations, but if the notation is really new, which has to be the case if it's just your first lecture about the topic, it always lends itself to hiding the meaning. Yeah, so it's easier to stay with words as long as possible and connecting the words with the notation. And so I try to avoid that, making that too notation heavy. So what we would do here is this, if just one part is relevant, this means we only have this part which is relevant. And you could also say that in this pair, you only have to look at this first entrance here, and we call this reduced payoff matrix. So this leads to the so-called reduced payoff matrix, or reduced U. So for all the pairs, we just need the first members. So this is not enough to make calculations possible. So we need several cases. The first case under scenario one is, you know, this, you will laugh at me because this looks like wishful thinking. Nevertheless, it's really a case. So we make a game with prior knowledge. So we can make a decision. So A knows B, and I will put here an index. This refers to this. We have a strategy 1, 2, 3, and so on, and so we know which one of all the strategies of player B are chosen. And this could really happen for several reasons. So one reason could be that someone told player A the decision already, or because there are so good reasons for player B to choose just one of all the options which are there. There's just one option which is just the best, obviously. And you could think of that player B would be very stupid not to choose this one. And so you have prior knowledge what will happen. And of course, then it's easy what player A should do. You just choose the strategy which, under the assumption that a player B chooses BJ, gives the most payoff for you. And we can write that as mathematical formula, as choosing the maximum of all payoffs. And I will refer to the elements in the matrix by their index indices. I hope you can, maybe not so important. So if it's really important to distinguish I and J, I will mostly use I and K because that's easier. But here it's just, you know, you go through the matrix. What is really important is this J here refers to this J. So you are really varying only the I. And of course, you just have a look at all the I's which are there. Was already one step ahead. So, and you choose this maximum, and I just give it a name. I call it UKJ. And I give it a name means I just put these double points here. And also here, of course, this is the optimal answer to this strategy J. And this is, might be, I have to choose strategy 1 or 2. And in order to have just a general name for that, it's strategy K. So, which means, maybe I write this also here, not just telling only, A plays AK. So that's at least what we think every rational being would do, just to choose the maximal payoff. But this is kind of a general assumption in game theory. So if you behave completely irrational, it's not really clear how to model that. It's probably very complicated. And then, of course, it's always a question how rational human beings really behave. So maybe you should also find numbers for anger and, you know, being just against something completely, even if it's against your own good, you just choose against it. So I think, for example, looking from Germany to the US, it's against all persons living in the US to choose Trump. And there are so many persons not aware of that, so many. So it's really very irrational from our point of view to have a model for that. It's probably not completely impossible, but it's not so easy. And, you know, this is just a very clear case for us, at least. In other cases, it's not so clear. Nevertheless, there's always kind of a part irrational in ourselves. Okay, so this is kind of the easiest case. But But nevertheless, even with the easiest case, you see what a game theory tries to do by choosing something as a reaction to the other player, which is the best outcome for us. So this is kind of the general core of game theory. And you would like to have situations in which you have kind of good guesses what the other player is doing in order to make good decisions as a reaction to that. So, and so even this was kind of an easy case. There are cases which are treatable even being not that easy. Second scenario is that player A knows nothing about B. So in our first scenario, we knew everything. Now we know nothing. And this is just a very short formulation on the blackboard, and just meaning that we have no idea what kind of a strategy B will choose. This is the only interesting question for player A, what kind of thing we will choose. Then we could follow even two cases again. So now we are on a third, a small level. First scenario, case B, subcase one. We could be either a player which prefers risk if there is some gain to make, or we could be a very careful player which just wants to minimize losses. And both strategies are good strategies. They are just connected to either in which situation we are making decisions or what kind of person we are. So, first case, we risk, take risk for high payoff, very short. And I make this a bit more clear in the formulas. This means high. So what we would do, we would choose a strategy, and in our mathematical model, this means we choose the number of the strategies, K, such that whenever we are looking through the columns and the rows of our matrix, so we have a look at all the U, I, J's again, but we are going through all of them. So I should, I have the possibility NA for the I's and NB for the J's. Then we will choose the one which is realizes a maximum among all the J's. So among all the strategies which B could choose, we choose the one reaction which is the maximal one. So with our prior knowledge, we just had to look through one row or one column depending on how we write our payoff function. And here we have to look through all the matrix. Of course, if we have a matrix, as in our example, it's just four elements, it's not so hard. We could even do this by hands and without using a computer. But, you know, the general idea is that, of course, we look at more numbers here. And then we choose that K. Maybe I just use color again. Even I should use a different one because it's a different role. So we choose that K, where this is the highest one going through one column. So we try to get the maximal payoff. Of course, we might not get it, because if player B chooses a different element in the same column, we don't get it. But at least we did everything that it was possible. So now, if we are more careful, so we try to minimize losses. So this is for risk, and this is being more careful. We try to maximize the guaranteed payoff. And also here we look through all the elements, but we will not maximize on that. We just take the maximum on all the minima. So this goes over J, this goes over I. And of course, to be precise, I should write it like here, but I think it's easier to read like that. And we choose the K such that it realizes this guaranteed payoff, which is the minimum in the J row. Also here we choose K such that this first looks a bit counterintuitive because there are so many minima, but this is just translating that we are looking for the guaranteed payoff. And maybe it's good to have at least one play example in order to see what is the difference between case I and case II. So if I am writing my payoff matrix as being 0, 30, 10, and 10, what this means, example, and I should maybe raise the blackboard, not raise it. This was too high because we need the formula. So with the example, you already see that this is the reduced one because there are no pairs, there are just numbers. And now the question is, if we decide according to taking a risk for getting the maximum, what would we choose? Where is the maximum payoff? Yeah, the 30, yes, the 30 is the maximum payoff. I'm just giving this a red circle. So, and in order to be able to have this as one possibility, we would choose the first strategy, A1. This is the first line, yeah? And if we would have to be sure that we get something, so kind of the guaranteed thing, of course, choosing, even, you know, we don't really need the formulas. We need them if there are more elements. But if we choose A1, of course, we could get either 0 or 30. So if we are risky, we take A1 no matter, and then we will have to live if it's 0. But if we would be a bit more careful, we might choose A2, because then the outcome is always 10, which is more than 0. Yeah, because here the minimum is 0, here the minimum is 10, so we take the maximum out of all the minima, and we will choose A2. And this is realized in our example, no matter what B is doing, because the payoff is the same. So if I would, for example, change my example to have a 20 here, it would still be the same outcome because the guaranteed thing here is 10, which is always more than the 0 here. So I think from the example, it's clear that the idea behind that is a clear one and a rational one. But writing down the formulas, it loses, you know, to grasp what's really happening. So B is doing whatever. Yeah. So this is A1, and this is A2. And yeah, this is clear. This is what I would try to prevent from happening. So, like that. Okay, so this was our first scenario. Second scenario says we don't really make so many assumptions with only the assumption that the other player is being rational. Both assume the other to be rational. We Which sounds like, you know, not a very strong assumption and also not with a lot of information. But what's really happening here is that in order to work with that, we don't really have enough tools, because at the moment we just have the payoff function and the strategies related to the payoff function and the metrics. Now we need something which can we can use to work with the reactions to something, so kind of assumed reactions to an assumed behavior of the other person. And so we need a new function, the so-called response function. So the game, analyzing the game beforehand would mean I play with all the scenarios which I consider possible, and then I react on assumed behavior of B and look at all my reactions with the help of the response function, and then I choose the one which for a certain reason makes the most sense. And, you know, this is what we are doing in everyday life a lot, even without writing down response functions and payoff and things like that. So I should bring a little bit of that on the blackboard. Maybe I start with, we need a response function, giving it a name. It will be R, like response. And of course, we have a response function of the player A and a response function of the player B. And I will go back to my notation with this capital X, standing for either A or B. And we are looking at the strategies of the opponent. So we can use this minus X here. And we get a lot of possibilities, which in mathematical terms we can prescribe by the power set of all combinations. And in my university times, the power set was always with this German capital P. So this is the so-called power set in English. In German, it's Potenzmenge, so it's the set of all subsets. And of course, I will have to write down how this works. So I will take an element from the response where I want to have a response. I call this y. And this maps to an element in my strategy set of x. So now I will put here this in order that you can see this is a small x and this is a capital X. And we will choose a special representative, and that's why it gets a hat, such that when we have a look at the payoff function, putting this hat X together with the strategy Y of the opponent, then we get the maximal payoff. Going through all strategies which are available. So, of course, this is a precise mathematical formula. What's expressed with this formula is I'm varying my strategy, so to say, and I test them against the strategies of my opponent and have a look at all the payoffs which are there. And then I'm choosing the maximum of all payoffs and so here we were finding a K, and here we are finding a hat X, so a special strategy out of my strategies as a response to all the possible strategies of the opponent. So maybe I should connect this somehow. Maybe color is better because it's already so dense. So this here means I vary my strategy, and then I'm choosing the maximum, and the maximum is realized for this capital X, and this capital X is the number or the strategy which is connected to all my Ys. So for example, a very easy application for that is if I know what my opponent is doing, so my first case scenario, then I'm just choosing the optimal response for that, and I'm just doing here the same as I was doing at the beginning, only we didn't call it response function. So maybe I put this here just as a reminder. So simple example. A knows BJ and chooses correspondingly. And this also has a name. This is called certainty game because we know. So, of course, it's not enough if we have just one response function. We need response functions for both. And this is already kind of put on the blackboard by using this X. So we have a response function RA, which connects to the strategies of B by calling them S minus A. And we have a response function RB, looking at the strategies of A, calling them S minus B. And we can also here connect all these responses in pairs of responses because it worked really good for the payoff function. We can do that here as well. So maybe I'm just writing here, we use both response functions as pairs of numbers or pairs. Of course, the response function doesn't give a number, it gives a strategy. And I prepared an example for that. So I'm writing a payoff matrix with pairs. So just, I think with four pairs, it doesn't take so much time. And maybe it gets for writing the response function. It's easier if I'm doing the same thing as we did here a bit more precisely. So here we have the reaction if A1 and B1 come together. Here we have A1 and B2 in the first. And in the second row, we have A2 together with B1. And A2 together with B2. So this is just, these are the numbers, and these are our notations for the strategy. So if player A plays his first strategy and player B also the first strategy, the outcome for player A is 0 and for player B is 20. And if A has first strategy and player B is second one, the outcome for player A is 30 and for the player B is 20 and so on. So now we want to use, so we are looking for this response function as the maximum varying in between the possible strategies, which here are just two. And very often we like to do this. So the response function is just underlining the best response, which is kind of, you know, it's not what's on the blackboard, but what's done if you need a shorthand doing that. Of course, this only works for finite game. This is kind of obvious. So maybe I'm just putting everything on the blackboard which I need, and then I'm trying to explain that a bit more clearly. So if I'm looking for the response function of player A with respect to the first strategy of B, then we will get some result which at the moment I'm just writing, and then we will have to defend that this is true. Then the response function of player B to choosing A1 could be either B1 or B2. The response to B2 would be A1. And there is a last case, the response of player B to strategy A2 would be so what should we do if we want to find out what is the response to player B choosing his first strategy? We have to compare these two numbers here, which means these two pairs with respect to the first number, because this is the payoff for player A. And the optimum here is this 10, because this is more than 0. And so the response should be to choose this strategy, which is A2. So the answer of B to A1, we have to compare these two with respect to the second one, which is the same. It's always 20. So it doesn't matter. We can choose either B1 or B2, and so on. So you can complete that as a proof that you understood what we are doing here. Yes, your question? Yeah, that's of course, but this is already kind of a second step afterwards. Now we are just collecting the response function. Of course, then we will have to see what would be the optimal choice after that. So this is kind of a preparational step doing that. Yes. So since our time is almost over, I would like to finish for today with that. And I would like to continue next week with just half an hour about game theory, showing you the notion of a dominant strategy, which unfortunately not always exists, but sometimes it can be replaced by the so-called Nash equilibrium, which was the reason for giving a Nobel Prize to a mathematician, which is something. Thank you for your attention.